I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see below the surface.
Mm-hmm. And this is episode number 58. And today we're going to talk about Of Gods and Men, a movie that blew me away, very serious movie. Well, not really our typical fare, I don't think. But man, this was an incredible film.
This is our first, Catholic or Christian movie that we deliberately chose for that theme. So, wow, what a movie to pick.
Yeah, that was an astounding movie. Astounding movie.
It was amazing.
So it's French. See, the original title, Des Hommes et des Dieux,
right?
Which I think is Of Men and Gods.
It is?
Yes. I looked that up. And the director is Xavier Beauvoir. Hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Très bien.
Yay, thanks. The inspiration for the movie was a book called The Monks of Tiberine. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, by John W. Kaiser.
That's right, because in the comments, the Kurt Jester said he had read the book.
Yeah, and I'm definitely going to read this book.
I know.
The book is highly regarded, too, it looks like. It's got really nice reviews and everything, and I would like to know more. This is neat.
Yeah.
I was wondering that myself. It's weird, when you see something that's true, a true story. So, yeah, that's neat. Oh, my gosh, people died, and tough.
Right.
Tough thing.
And also because it wasn't... The thing that was impressive about this movie is they were just telling the story, as far as I could tell, as honestly as possible, and therefore it wasn't all layered up with, now let's be sentimental, now let's get the heroic message across.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it was somebody making a movie that's about Christians, not a Christian making a movie to make a point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that totally. And the focus of the movie was a little bit different than, if I had heard a description, I think I would have been surprised by the content.
I wasn't. It was exactly what I expected.
Did you? Okay.
I mean, in terms of it was quiet and meditative and a lot of silence.
Yeah, well, what I mean by that is, here we have these monks making this stand, against this evil Islamic fundamentalism or whatever.
Uh-huh.
That's not really what it was. To me, it was, these monks were split. There was a bunch of them completely unsure that they wanted to stay. Of course, there's danger and everything, but the conversation amongst them and the discernment they were going through, trying to decide whether or not to stay, and this little diplomatic group with the leader and the weight of all that stuff was fascinating to me. I thought it was good.
That's the thing. I did not expect most of the movie to be about their discernment. That was kind of interesting. And there was also actually a little bit more action than I expected in the movie in terms of people coming and going and who was actually against them and who wasn't against them. Some of those things were surprising. So maybe we should talk very briefly, and that'll be easy, about what the movie's about.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's these monks, they're Trappists, in a monastery in this town of Tiberine, and it's a Muslim country. It's in Algeria. They're Christians in a Muslim country, and they're very much entwined with the local town, which is very, very poor. And they're very, very poor too. Trappists, they don't have stuff. They're, very poor themselves, live a very sparse life. And, there's a doctor among the monks. Actually, I don't know if he was a full-fledged doctor, whatever, but he was medically trained.
Right.
And, he was administering medicine to all the people. And in a nutshell, what it is, there's an Islamic fundamentalist group that starts to rebel against the government, but the government is also corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like, well, the government deserves to be overthrown, but, the Islamic fundamentalist militants are really not who you want taken over. And these fundamentalist Islamists start to kill foreigners, so they start to feel threatened. And the government, this corrupt government, offers to protect them, but they don't want to be tied to this corrupt government.
Well, when did that happen? What?
When did which happen?
The corrupt government thing.
Well, then remember the guy, there was an incident at a mine, I think, where these foreigners got killed.
When they killed the Chechens?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The government showed up at that point at the monastery with the military and said, hey, we'll protect you. And the abbot of the monastery said, no, we're not going to accept that.
Why? I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, much to the chagrin of the rest, you know, about half of the monks at that point were like, holy cow, why don't we want them here? And he was saying, well, this government is corrupt. You know, the government is not helping the people of this town at all. So you've got people of the town who probably would be threatened if the government was around this monastery. You know, the abbot's point was, you know, hey, we're part of the people here.
Yeah.
We don't want to be separate from the people by having the military present. And then finally he got to a point where he said, do you guys want the military present? And they kind of, you know, all kind of looked at their shoes and they were like, no, not really.
I guess I'm going to have to rewatch. I can't believe I completely either didn't understand those were the military or, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah. And then,
I just remember people showing up and going, wow, this happened, and them going, and then you probably should leave, and them going, we'll just stay. This is where we live. I don't remember identifying those people as the way you say, so wasn't, I guess, paying attention.
Mm-hmm. So then later on, so now they're between this, you know, they find themselves in a no-win situation. The government is threatening to them. And the Islamic fundamentalists are threatening to them. And the abbot's attempt to navigate between those two is just, you know, destined for failure.
Well, and he's not actually really spending very much time dealing with either group of people.
No, he's not.
I mean, the terrorists show up at one point and they want to take the doctor with them because they've got a couple people who are wounded. And the abbot, because they talked about what to do and everybody's divided, and he very bravely says, well, you can't have that gun in here. They're just like, I'm not putting my gun down. First of all, I thought they'd shoot his head off right
then.
That
was a neat scene. Yeah, it was really tense because we've seen these terrorists in action before, and the leader of them was amongst this group that visited this monastery.
Right.
On Christmas Eve, no less.
Yeah.
So he shows up and says, hey, I want your doctor and I want all your medicine. And the abbot says, no. this is for all the people of this town and, you know, you shouldn't take it. And somehow I think it's just respect. The guy was like, holy cow, you know, people don't talk to me this way. And it may have been, you know, you people are not who I thought you were.
I felt it was because they were holy men, where he just said, this is a place of peace. You can't have these guns here. But he goes, well, I'm not putting my gun down. He goes, well, I'll come outside and talk to you, which surprised me because that was not, I'm refusing to talk to you. It was, this place is different. And so when he did that and he's saying, well, the medicines we have are very poor because that's how we are part of the people. Mm-hmm. We are also poor like the people, and the people need the medicine. And then he said, you know, my doctor, he's very old and asthmatic. He'd never be able to make a trip and all these things. And I don't think that terrorist was used to talking to people who kind of embodied the idealism that he held. I mean, you find out later how awful that guy really was. But the side of him we see is the side that says, oh, this religion does matter, however poorly he's, you know, expressing it by killing people. And so because at the end, when the abbot's quoting to him from the Quran, the guy finishes the sentence.
Yeah.
And then he says, okay, well, I'm going. And he says, oh, by the way, this is a different night from all other nights. And I'm like, oh man, you are way too brave. And like, oh, he's like, oh, what, you're Christian God? And instead he says it's the night that he was born, and he says, and he uses the Arab name, and the guy turns around and says, Jesus. He uses the Christian name.
Yeah,
and later you find out he's been protecting the monastery, so he had a respect for them based on their faith.
Yeah, and you know, I got the impression that he was protecting the monastery from that moment forward.
Right. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yeah, so it was almost like a, you know, this respectful thing. And that was another theme. I don't know if you'd call it a theme, but one of the things that interested me was in his later interaction with the government military. He was praying over so this guy that he talked to eventually gets killed,
right?
Because you know
he's at war
and he is horrible. He's absolutely horrible. So
they dragged him through the street behind the car, and then here he died by himself. He's like, no one should die like that. And he's like, and the military guy's like, do you know how he tortured people? Shall I describe to you?
Yeah.
And again, the abbot won't bend, but this military guy is not respectful at all.
Right. So then, for some reason, he brings the abbot down to identify this body. And
right.
I'm not sure what the point of that was. It's not like the government didn't know who the guy was.
Well, he said, are you sure it's him? And he says, that's why you're here.
That was interesting. So, anyway, he identifies the body and says, yeah, that's him, and then starts to pray right there. And the disgust on the military man's face is just evident.
Yeah, at that point we said, I myself knew that at the end they died, but I thought, who does it?
Yeah.
There's this uncertainty.
Right. And I am not as familiar as I probably should be with Islam, but it seemed to me that that was a moment at which it was clear that these two people did not understand each other.
I just felt like they hated him so much because it's like somebody praying over Hitler's body.
I mean,
I remember one time being in one of these RCIA small groups and talking about how the Catholic Church doesn't say that anyone's in hell, because although Christ said there were, you know, souls there, they don't know who they are. So they're not going to condemn anyone that way, but therefore you would pray for anyone. And I said, yeah, for, you know, we don't know if Hitler's there. And someone went, what, Hitler? He's got to be in hell. And I was like, I don't, maybe at the last minute he repented. Well, that's not enough. And I'm like, it could be for God. You know, so I just felt like it was kind of that dichotomy too of, I'm sorry, I saw these tortured people, or I lived under the reign of terror. Because that's when the guy says, yeah, word is, he protected your monastery. So they're already resentful.
Yeah, and then that moment of prayer over this guy's body, that seemed to permanently damage their relationship with the government. That was it. So now they've lost the protection of this guy who was killed, have no idea who the new leader is of this Islamic group, and no idea if that person is going to be sympathetic or not. And now they've got a government that's hostile, because now the government views them as collaborators in a way.
Right. Although, you know, the way we're talking about the main action points of the story, and I would say that these are really distributed throughout the movie in a way that they come up kind of as points of interest, like, but most of the movie, when these guys are deliberating about should they stay or should they go, it's not because, oh my gosh, now the government's against us. That really is never brought up. It's really the dangers there, and it's usually thought about as the terrorists, I thought. And it's really more, what should we take care of our bodily safety, or should we stay here where God planted us, essentially?
Yeah.
And people kept saying, I'm not here to be a martyr. You know, I didn't sign up to be a martyr, which is not what you expect monks to say, but they're human. And that's, so I like that. And then that's when the abbot or, you know, somebody else will kind of go, well, but you already gave your life up. You died to the world when you became a monk. So if this is where you were sent, we're not looking to be martyrs. We'll do everything we can to keep from dying. But if that's what it comes down to, that's not our call.
Yeah, and the movie was largely about that for me, you know, and I agree mm-hmm. with what you're saying that, you know, and that was my point about how I feel like the movie is different from the description. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know how you describe it, but the main point to me in this movie was the process of discernment from the moment the tension started.
Right.
And they were split to everything that occurred internally for them. And there was, you know, a lot of really different people in this monastery mm-hmm. and, how it ended. It was remarkable to me. I thought it was amazing.
Oh yeah. Well, and also cause I kept watching it thinking they don't have to stay. I mean, there's mm-hmm. nothing, it's not like, I don't know. It's not like without them, Christianity will die. There isn't Christianity. I mean, among the people or whatever, but what you see at one point, although this only affected a couple of the monks, is from the very beginning, you see how intertwined they are with the town. There's a celebration and they're all invited, even though it's clearly, you know, there's a religious ceremony going on and they're part of that. Mm-hmm. It's an Islamic ceremony. And then, you know, obviously from taking care of the people of the town through the medicine, and they have a meeting with the people at one point, the abbot and a couple other people. And they said, well, one of the guys says, well, we're not sure if we're going to leave or not. And the people are like, whoa, you can't go. We're here because of you. This village is here because of the monastery. Our elders told us to leave, but we thrive because of you. And the guy says, the monk says, well, we're not sure. We're like birds on a branch. Do we sit or do we fly away? And this woman says, no, we're the birds. You're the branch. You give us secure footing. And at that point, I was like, oh, okay. They're being told how they affect other people. Did they realize that? I don't know. But they're being told, you make a difference, yeah. you being here. And I thought, oh, well, that's it. And then I was really surprised when they had the vote around the kitchen table after that, because mm-hmm. everyone had been putting forth all the reasonable things. And in conversations, like, you know, the guy who... he couldn't feel God anymore. Yeah. He's like, he's not there. I ask where he is. I don't know what to do. I want to leave, but I don't feel him. And they've all been discerning, and their discernment, although it's all expressed very differently, is the same thing. We're not done here somehow.
Yeah, and they all come to the same conclusion. Yeah, right. They all come to the same conclusion, but for different reasons. They've all, you know, even in this monastery, you know, you picture them as, you know, one homogenous group of people that kind mm-hmm. of are a single purpose, you know, but they've all got the reasons that they were there in the first place, you know, the things that they've done, the things that they've left are all different.
Mm-hmm.
What they see as their purpose is a little bit different, but yet as the time moves on, they all come to the same conclusion.
Yeah.
And, the journey of the, you know, I looked this one up that I thought that monk who was having difficulty, you know, he was so scared and he wanted to leave so badly.
The younger one.
Yeah. His name in the movie was Christoph, it looks like.
Oh, right.
Actor named Olivier Rabourdin.
He was amazing.
Yeah, it was just, all the actors were amazing. You know, this was something I never doubted for a second that this, you know, it was almost like a documentary in a way, wondering if these were really them. You know, I never doubted for a second.
Yeah.
This guy, Michael Lonsdale, who played Luke, who is the doctor, was amazing.
And that little old guy.
Yeah, that.
I can't remember
Amadee.
Yeah, that's his name was different because it wasn't one of the names where you could go, oh, these are more Christian names, you know.
Yeah,
Amadee.
Yeah, and just fantastic. But all of the internal, it was really neat that this movie was able to portray that, and I think that what's different about this movie is how they just kind of showed you them living. Mm-hmm. There would be large, you know, a 5-minute stretch of somebody planting a garden.
Yeah.
You know, or them, you mentioned them taking part in this celebration. It was a Islamic celebration of, I don't know, like a birthday or something. I'm not really sure. That's,
I know. I felt that way too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm no dialogue at all, just them doing stuff, you know, plowing the field. How the emotion of the scene of this guy who's having difficulty plowing the field and having trouble plowing the field and wrestling with this tractor for just a brief minute. I mean, I thought that scene was incredible. And, you know, how they would have, you know, how could you have said, okay, we want you to have trouble with this tractor in this way is almost like an accident of filming or whatever. Do you know which scene I'm talking about?
Yeah, but it's like a, isn't it like an ox and a plow or something?
Yeah, well, and, it's actually a tractor. They just went,
okay, we've got this part done. You take it over. And the actor's like, oh, fine.
But it was at a moment that was, he was horrified. He was sure that any moment someone's going to come shoot him, right? Or split his throat or chop his head off or whatever. So he's looking, you know, he's driving this tractor and he's looking around. Like, he keeps looking around. And then, but he's trying to plow this field. And the tractor gets stuck and his wheels are spinning. And he's lifting the thing up and getting a little bit angry with it. And then finally it gets moved on and he looks around again. That scene just blew me away, and it was like, you know, if a person wanted to set that up and film it, it seems like it'd be hard to come up with. But I thought it was just things like that. And there,
wasn't somebody from the town helping him plant the seeds?
Yeah, after it got all plowed,
Which also showed how intertwined they were even at that moment, because the townspeople didn't abandon him, because for one thing, they needed the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But at the point when the soldiers, was it soldiers or other terrorists? Anyway, they come and want medicine and they're refused again and go away the next to the last time. There are other people from the town there who aren't there for medicine. That young girl who was talking about, how do you know when you're in love?
Oh, I love, that was
and
good
her,
too.
her, whether it was a brother or a father, the older man who would talk to them a lot.
Yeah.
They were just there visiting.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that was a neat scene too, where it was that older doctor sitting there with this young girl, and the young girl's just talking to him, and he's giving her advice, and it's just amazing, you know. That just it was so effective.
It showed how trusted they were. And
they were really part of the life there.
Yeah,
and just in these little moments, you know, you could see it. You know, they showed us. There wasn't a lot of dialogue to it. You know, that scene there was, but I thought that, you know, most of the movies that we see are just go, 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 go.
Mm-hmm.
And it was neat to have a movie that it's actually a recent movie too. It was done was it in the 90s?
2011.
Okay.
I thought.
So,
or 10 maybe.
Okay. Yeah. 2010. There it is. Okay. So yeah. So it's really recent, but yet it took its time. And there, you know, to take almost a minute to show you what things look like from this monastery. You remember that part near the beginning where they just panned and you could see the mountains and everything. And then it rested on one of these monks who's just sitting there looking and satisfied, you know, like, wow, isn't this just awesome? And, you know, there's not a lot of that anymore in the movies. And it was just really effective.
Well, and I know this movie was really given a lot of awards, which, you know, the more arty movies tend to be anyway. But this one I thought was extraordinary, because I'll tell you what surprised me more than the slowness was how many times we saw them celebrating Mass. Because that was such a part also of their lives, along with the plowing and the doctoring of the people and going to their celebrations. They continually were showing them at Mass, you know, whether it was singing part of the liturgy or at the end when somebody's doing their gospel reading and it's talking about, you know, there will be two people in bed and one will be taken and one will be left. And I suddenly thought, oh my gosh, do they not all get taken away?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and those points are used to show how they live, but they're also, of course, used to point up the, what is it, the universality, the timelessness of the liturgy and how it applies to life in every circumstance. Mm. Because it was a lot of times reflecting the very uncertainty and fear that they were feeling, these were being expressed by the psalms that they would sing and chant.
Yeah, yeah.
And
as happens in life all the time.
Right, exactly. And so that question that the guy, the young guy who's more tortured or more outwardly tortured than the others, where he says, does dying here serve a purpose? And his abbot tries to make him understand that we can't always see the purpose. Well, that's not the point. The point is we gave up trying to choose the purpose when we became monks. And that's kind of it as Christians, too. We can't always see the point of what we're doing. You know, we're living. We're just living. And at the end, the abbot has a talk where he kind of gives his reflections on that, too, where he says, what is it that we're beckoned from one birth to another all the time. We're constantly being reborn until we become who we're supposed to be. This is a paraphrase. But I thought about that and I thought, well, that's every human life too. We're not usually faced by terrorists. But when is the fertilizer plant going to blow up? You know, when is somebody going to commit some horrible act of violence like in Boston? And when is it just this thing that happens in your own life that's a personal tragedy?
Yeah.
Those things all happen in the midst of life. They always surprise us because we don't expect them, and we always have to have our faith and our trust.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those are good points. How the liturgy ties into our lives all the time, you know, it's really amazing sometimes. You know, where you're, you go in and you hear something that's really what you needed to hear for some reason. And, it's something else. How about when the monks were eating and one of them was reading? I thought that was kind of a neat scene, too. One of them read while everyone else ate.
That's a monastic thing.
Yeah. I thought that was neat to see that. I mean, we saw all kinds of aspects of their lives, and you know how they would. They had a lot of books and things. They were, you know, it seemed like they had a time of day where they would go in and read, and things, you know, and they didn't have people running around doing their dishes and everything. Their whole way of life was really shown. Yeah, it was really simple, and it was just shown so well in the movie. You know, it wasn't like there was this big slow part at the beginning, and then the movie takes off. You know, it was all interspersed in there, and it just seemed so perfectly put together. I just really admire this movie.
Well, yeah, because it really did show, you know, you knew the abbot from the beginning. He had no doubt that, I mean, he had doubts on behalf of everybody he was in charge of, I felt like.
Yeah.
But for himself, he knew the right thing to do was stay, but he didn't try to pressure anybody.
Yeah.
And the guy who was really conflicted, it was after he said, you know what, God set the table, here we are, let's stay. And after that was when they showed his moment of prayer, where before he had been so frustrated and so alone, but he had basically given his will over to God's and said, okay, whatever. And he was at peace. And then he had the moments of connection with God, and which were so beautifully done. And I thought, of course, that's how it is in my own life. After you've given in, that's when you go, oh, I was stupid to fight. It's like I have control. What difference does it make? I'll just, you know, do this little thing that's not even a big thing.
Yeah.
Why was I fighting? And that's when it's not even that God's not there. A lot of times it's that you have shut the door and you won't let him in.
Yeah. And, you know, for so many different reasons, you know, fear or whatever. But his arc is one of the most amazing things about this movie.
Right.
It was really moving, the whole thing. so well acted. We said that before, but you know, all these actors were really excellent.
Yeah, because that it's funny because you don't feel like you're connecting with all of them, but they have this moment where they've all made their decision. They're all at peace with it. And I can't remember if it's before or after that helicopter comes, but that's the moment where you feel like they really get their, maybe the outpouring or the inpouring of the Holy Spirit, where it's like, okay, here we are together. We're singing. This is our faith. This is how we're going to do it. But they've also had this moment with the two bottles of wine and the Tchaikovsky playing. And they go through a lot of emotions at that point. It's not at all outwardly expressed like it would be in an American movie.
Yeah.
But as they show all the faces and how they smile or encourage each other or have their moments of reflection, I suddenly realized I kind of did know all these people. And I did love them. And I could kind of, you could feel how they loved each other.
Yeah, and that was an incredible scene. I mean, no dialogue at all. And, wow, you know, from joy to sadness, you know, acceptance. I mean, all this stuff just on their faces. Amazing. Yeah. It's not something that I've seen very often in movies.
And, no.
Just something else. So, yeah, I can't recommend this movie enough. It is, I mean, it's difficult. It's sad. But it's just so, I don't know.
Well,
I'm trying to put it into words. I mean, this movie transcends everything. Go ahead.
I have to say too, it makes me think I recently saw an online screener of Terrence Malick's To the Wonder, which I do not recommend to anyone, but I had his movie Tree of Life on my, you know, must-see movies of the year, and I knew that his movies are slow and they don't have a lot of narrative arc and all these various things. And after seeing To the Wonder, which people, like his cinematographer, was saying, yes, it's got less story than most of his stuff, and we went, no. But what struck me is what this movie did with essentially the same sort of thing, but taking the trouble and time to have an actual story to tell us versus telling the actors, I want you to be in love now, you know, go around and do something together, which was kind of how the Terrence Malick movie was. I thought this guy was so much, he was such a better filmmaker, the director of this, than Terrence Malick, in my opinion. Now, I haven't seen Terrence Malick's other movies. People will probably beat me about the Head and Shoulders, who love his movies, because that's how that works. And I'm always told, well, it's just not your kind of movie, because the implication being I'm more of a thriller kind of person. Yeah. I can't deny a good superhero movie is going to get me going. But this movie is like movies like Babette's Feast or other movies like that, where it's got the meditative quality, but they take the time and trouble to give you, to feed you at the same time with something they care about, with an actual story, with something that's set up to mean something. And I appreciate that versus people who just throw a lot of stuff out there and edit it all together, don't finish it off, and then you're told, oh, you're just not cultured enough to get it.
Yeah.
That's my small rant.
Well, I've watched a lot of art films, but, I can sure say that this one felt different to me in the way that it was put together, but I thought it was terrific. I liked the lingering, like I said before. It was all purposeful, and you're right. There was a story here, and it was all there. Yeah.
So beyond the story and the movie, what did you take away from it? What were you left with anything personally?
Yeah. I just go back to discernment. I don't know. That has been an important theme to me. Probably for a while, you know, I was really stunned when, you know, when Pope Benedict resigned, the thing that that really got me in his statement was not, you know, he didn't say, hey, God told me that this is what I should be doing. You know, I had a conversation with God last night, or, you know, you hear so many other religions, you know, people doing that.
Right.
And just, you know, like Pat Robertson will come out and say, well, I was talking to God yesterday and he said we deserved it. You know, whatever he might be saying, you know. But, you know, this prayerful consideration and, you know, I think I'm at a time in my life where things kind of feel like, you know, I don't know, maybe midlife, you know, crisis type things, you know, where, you know, you've got a lot of things, a lot of possible directions, a lot of change, just a lot of things going on. And so discernment is important. And this movie, it's portrayed in a way and in a depth that I've never seen before. That aspect of it just really, that's what I take away from this movie.
Yeah, because the important thing was at that table when they were sitting around, a few people had always been certain.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody else who kind of had come to a conclusion, nobody, you're right, said, and I now know. They all just said, I'm not at peace about leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Or I just feel like we're not finished with whatever it is we're doing here. And so it was those vague nudgings they were responding to.
Yeah, and there was one guy who's kind of, you know, I mean, I can't remember how many monks there were, 7 or 9 or something like that.
I think there were 8, yeah.
Okay, so there was one guy who said, hey, you know, I went home the other day and saw my family and, you know, it was great, but
his
I really
mother's
belong
80th
here.
Birthday.
Yeah. And, you know, that was a really moving speech too. And you really, like you said before, you know, about, you know, do I really know these guys? But, you know, he was somebody who we didn't spend a lot of time with in the movie. Mm-hmm. And yet he gives a speech and it was just like, wow, you know, that's interesting. And, you know, God showing us things in that way through things that happen and, you know, prayerful consideration and how important prayer is and all that things,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's
not rushing.
Yeah. Why does everything have to be in a hurry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now I kind of felt like, I was left with two different things, which were both more, but obviously more practical to my own life in terms of I kept thinking, what are all the little things I complain about or that I see other Christians, especially Catholics, complaining about?
Mm-hmm.
We cry and we moan and it's not fair and we're angry and we lash out. And I think, and it's nothing compared to what these people and our brothers and sisters in places right now around the world are being subjected to.
Yeah, so true. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean that what we work for isn't important, but it's the attitude with which we do it, you know.
Yeah.
That we is lacking, I think, sometimes.
Sure enough.
And I'm looking at myself, not just, you know, I mean, I can see it reflected because that's part, I guess, of why it's hard for the wealthy man to make the road to heaven versus the one who's had everything stripped away.
Yeah.
It's hard for us to discern, as you say, what's really important. But I just thought about the complaints that, you know, one of my coworkers sings in our choir and she'll, oh, now everybody's complaining about this. And I have to say, in my own situation, when you brought up Pope Benedict, I'm going to make a public admission. I'm struggling with Pope Francis. It's mm-hmm. not that I don't like him. He's just very, very different. He's very different from John Paul. He's very different from Benedict, both of whom I related to on some level. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I liked right away. And it's not that I don't like Pope Francis, but he's just so different. And I read these homilies he gives and I'm like, huh, well, that's okay. Not that deep. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't need deep always, right?
Right.
And that's fine. But for me personally, it's that change that you're talking about. It's how do I do adjusting to something that's so different? And as one of the the guys at the grocery store that I see a lot, who's a Christian, and he will sometimes we'll talk a little bit while I'm going through the store, and he keeps seeing me and going, "Hey, that Pope of yours, I like him. He seems like a really founded in Scripture." And I'm like, "Well, you're Protestant, of course, that's going to be really important." But I'm like, "It's all founded there, okay, guy." But and I said, "Well, you know," and this was very early when no one had any idea. And I said, "Well, some people, you know, he's so different from Pope Francis." And this was before I discovered I was struggling a little. And he said, "Christ had 12 disciples. They weren't identical." So I remind myself of that a lot, just going, you know what, this is showing us there's all different styles and all different ways to do it. God uses who he will.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't followed as closely. I haven't read a whole lot for a little while. But yeah, I do have, you know, I've got people that aren't, Catholic, you know, telling me all the time, you know, "Hey, this is really a remarkable thing that's going on over there." And so I'm assuming that there's something, you know, really, maybe that's the purpose of it. I don't know. But, you know, somebody, you know, who had zero respect for the Catholic Church suddenly does. Because of what
they're, you know, in a prison and
yeah,
things like
and
this.
The media is still, you know, on his side, it seems. So,
well, maybe. I mean, now he's, but the problem is he's still Catholic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and for the media.
And that's going to end. You know, the funny thing is when you get people that aren't Catholic to say, "Hey, you know what? He's for the environment." I'm like, well,
so
you know,
others.
Should I pull out what John Paul II said and what Pope Benedict said and all this stuff?
Right.
For somehow they missed all that, you know, and this Pope Francis is, you know, brand new and he's changing things, you know, when he hasn't, you know, he hasn't been there long enough to do that.
It.
It's just that he's got this different emphasis. Yeah.
Well, so. And the honeymoon's starting to dim just a little bit because he's got, you know, like the nuns that need reform in the U.S.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They went back to him and went, "Oh, well, now you'll change it." And he's like, "No, I think this all looks like it needs to be done." And they're like, "What? What's wrong with you?" And so all of a sudden there's a little tarnish on the honeymoon.
Yeah, so here we go. Yeah. So, so this all may change.
Yeah. And I just assume that, you know, it's just like anything. It's like when you move to a new place or start a new job and you're just like, yay. And then you go through this period of adjustment. And I figure that's me. I don't have to love reading his homilies to be faithful and to say that I don't have to actually be faithful or love the Pope. I assume that will come with time. Mm-hmm. I'll grow to adjust to his style. I'll appreciate it more. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just that thing of the change that's, wow, here's this sudden change. Do you just say, I trust that this is what God wanted. I'm just going to kind of go along with it and just get myself used to it. Or do you fight it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you run away?
Yeah. 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 Sure enough. Yep.
A long way to come from the movie, I think.
No, it's, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess another thing is how hopeless it is to think that you're in control of anything. Because when you look at this, this situation that they found themselves in, there was no good answer. You know, you try and think, well, you know, because this is a true story, you know, you think, well, could they have done something different? They could have got up and left, I guess. But I agree with, you know, their reasons and everything. You know, if they had left, it would have been like dying too. I know one of them said that. You know, they would have been like dying because their whole purpose would be gone.
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry.
I'm just going to say there's nothing that they could have done to prevent this triangle that they found themselves in. You know, for them to be honest and Christian and all of that and not ended up in that triangle that they ended up in would have been impossible, it looked to me.
Well, and that's the thing. A lot of times people don't have that option of leaving. The people from their town didn't have the option of leaving.
No, they didn't.
The terrorists would suddenly decide, you're not practicing a pure enough Islam. You, young girl, don't have a scarf on or a hijab or all those things. You're wearing jeans and a t-shirt. And I was thinking of, is this Timbuktu where this happened? You know, those people were all Islamic. And the terrorists came in, and the next thing the doctor of the town knows, he's being told he needs to come because they're chopping people's hands off and they need somebody to sew them up so they can then put them in prison or whatever. Hmm. I mean, this is just a few months ago.
Wow. Yeah.
And they were asking the U.S., please help us. And the U.S. is going, well, you know, okay, here's some weapons. It took the French Foreign Legion marching in to to shove these guys out of town because they just came and took over the town.
Wow.
No more music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just according to our rules of how you live. And there were people there who were imams, if that's how you say it,
mm-hmm.
who were going, no, no, no. Look, our reading is also good. And they're like, nope, I don't think so. You know, it's some sect of Christianity or, you know, the Puritans were suddenly running things in America.
Yeah. Yeah.
So... and no dialogue is possible. So what do you do?
These people
can't run. And so they were being true to the people that they'd been put there with.
Yeah.
They didn't have to be of their own faith. That's who they were put there to take care of, as the lady said, when they're the birds on the branch.
Hmm.
They do what they do. God takes care of them.
Yeah,
or he does.
They've got this, you know, this is, you know, from that Jesus of Nazareth book, you know, where he's talking about this kind of a silent, you know, or quiet power, I think is the way he put it.
Yeah.
There's this quiet power, and that's kind of what these guys had through God, you know, God working through them. You know, there's this quiet power that is just there, and it's always there. And, you know, you're the branch is kind of a illustration of it, you know, that they didn't even realize it. And, you know, that's amazing to think about. Because it is, you know, always there. And even throughout all of this stuff that's happening, you know, it's what's still there.
Yeah.
You know, when we move on, whatever happens, you know, it's still there.
Yeah.
And it's what's important.
Well, and the thing that was kind of interesting is the person who is... I never was really clear on who he was, if he was one of the brothers of the monastery or if he'd just been sent to check on things. He comes fairly late in the movie.
Yeah.
He's telling, oh, we saw these things at the checkpoint. So I'm like, yeah, yeah. And he hasn't been there very long when the terrorists show up and haul them away. And he's the one who's outwardly upset. He's the one who's crying. And it's not that the others were all being, you know, superhero strong. They just were reacting in accordance to their personalities, but they'd had time to prepare and discern, and they were kind of, they'd offered themselves up.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, they were just kind of going along, seeing what was going to happen. They're marching up the hill, helping each other march up that hill into the gray, and he's the one who's kind of sniffling, and, you know, and you felt bad for him. And not that maybe one of the regular guys wouldn't have been crying,
even if
he was prepared. That's just human nature. That's allowed.
Mm-hmm.
But it was clear that he hadn't had the process of discernment that they'd had.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that last scene, the final scene, so well done as well.
Oh, I mean, beautiful. They just go into the gray.
Yeah, he could have gotten all graphic and everything, and he didn't.
I was afraid he would.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And
so, go ahead.
The two, I didn't see how the other guy got out, but the little guy who slides under the bed, and they didn't even look under the bed because it was so confusing.
Yeah.
They thought they'd gotten everyone. And then I didn't see where the other guy, the younger guy was that also got away. I was stunned when he showed up at the gates. And maybe that's just how it was in the movie since I've only seen it once.
Yeah, I don't think they showed anything about that other guy. And
It was,
but again,
just,
it is a true story, and at the end, it just states, you know, these two did survive, and you know, the older fella died fairly soon after, not, you know, ten years.
No, actually, not, because this was in 1996. Mm-hmm. I think this happened.
So he died
until 2008.
Yeah, and then
the
other one's still alive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I know.
Yeah, and the other part of the true story. That I just kind of looked up. It said that they found the heads of these poor guys, but not their bodies. They never found their bodies. So,
wow.
And they're not, you know, they say that it's not really certain what happened, but it's pretty clear. It's just that they don't have, you know, they have something that fits the facts, but they just don't have, you know, positivity.
Details.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing where, you know, you look at it and it's like the one guy said, did this have a purpose? Well, we don't know.
Right.
I mean, obviously that's never what anyone wants, including God.
Mm-hmm.
But I did love the thing that they said about, whose voiceover was it? The doctor who was washing dishes, or the medically trained guy was washing dishes, and he's thinking about when, I'm confused now. But anyway, there's some point where they're telling you what somebody wrote in a letter. It's the last letter.
Yeah,
and he says,
it was the abbot.
I'm ready to go and be with God, and you, whoever it is who kills me, if this is what you do to me, okay, I'm ready and I forgive you. And I'm ready for us both to be with God, looking through his eyes at his Islamic children and seeing them the way he sees them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was this statement of forgiveness and love that was so moving. And it was like, if we could all just do that now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just talking about us. I'm talking about the Islamic, you know, extremists. And I mean, I guess that's always the thing, because the doctor's the one who said, well, I was here for the Nazis. Now I'm here for these guys. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
And I was shocked because I suddenly was jolted back to the fact that Nazis were not just the people shown in movies.
Mm-hmm.
They were thugs like this.
Yeah.
Just more organized.
Right. Yeah. And that letter was from Christian, the abbot. Right. There was a part in the movie where they showed him writing that letter.
Okay.
After he had come to terms himself, and he wrote the letter and put it in an envelope and put it on his desk.
I know. I kept wishing they would translate that. You know, you were clearly meant to be able to read part of the letter, and I was like, hello, non-French readers here, especially in handwriting on a movie. But
he even signed his name in
Arabic,
right.
Yeah, I know, which we were impressed at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, good choice, Scott.
Oh, man.
Thank you.
Oh, you bet. Did I choose that? I thought this was mutual.
Oh, well, I think I wanted you to choose because you wanted Jesus of Nazareth, and you're like, well, I don't know. And I was like, well, here are some of the movies that are on my, must-watch list, or movies that I would put forward. You went, oh, Of Gods and Men.
Yeah.
I went, okay. Because this is one of those movies that I know I should watch, but because I know they're slower, I know they're more serious, I have to kind of gird myself to just go, okay, you might come out of this not as happy as you could. That's all right. It's okay.
You bet.
Don't be afraid.
Well, fun. So, so next time we're going to do Jesus of Nazareth.
Mm-hmm.
From the baptism in the Jordan to the transfiguration by Pope Benedict XVI.
Oh, I'll be back on familiar ground.
Yes.
For just a little while.
I can't tell you. You know, I may as well just dip that book in yellow, because it's almost like every page I'm just like, I could read that book for the rest of my life, probably.
Well, I did think, you know, I'm done with the book. Now I should probably just start over.
Yeah, it's just amazing. You know, I know that I'm not going to get everything out of it.
No, and I would read it, and there are these things marked. I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I'm like, how did I not mark this last time? And I'm marking new things because they're all – I'm like, oh, this is the point of that. And so, yeah, I'm glad you chose it because
– oh, yeah, this is something.
I knew I needed to reread it.
Yep, and then some lighter fare, a couple of science fiction pieces.
Scott, you must be choosing again.
Yes, because this is good. So on May the 30th, we'll talk about iRobot, the
Woo-hoo!
Movie, which is great fun. And then on June the 13th, we'll talk about The Demolished Man by Alfred Bester.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, this is... Yeah, we've talked a little bit about the origins of this podcast, and I remember the first time I started to think about, you know, hey, how cool it would be to talk about things from a Catholic perspective was after we talked about an Alfred Bester novel on an SFF audio podcast. Not this one, but another one. Do you remember what it was called?
The Star is My Destination.
That's it, The Star is My Destination, yeah.
which is still up on SFF Audio. I'm not sure what number it is, but yeah, we'll link to it.
Sure, we'll link
to
it
when the time comes.
You bet. Yeah, someday we ought to do that book. But I thought, hey, let's do The Demolished Man.
Yeah, let's do that one. I kind of remember it, and it's a mystery.
It is, yeah. It's fun.
In a science fiction
it's
way.
It's fun, yeah. I hope that there's some stuff for us to discuss. But, you know, and Alfred Bester, you know, does get there, but this is a fun piece of science fiction.
Definitely. So, definitely. Yeah,
definitely in a science fiction mood.
So now, is there, just really quickly, is there anything else that you've watched lately that it could still be serious, but that you would recommend?
You know, I would recommend, we went and saw Oblivion.
Oh, okay.
That's with Tom Cruise. And and I say I would recommend it. You know, most of the people who listen to this podcast are probably readers. And I would say that if you are someone who reads science fiction, you'll probably not be as moved or enthused by what happens in Oblivion as, you know, people who don't usually read science fiction. I went with my daughter and one of her friends, and, you know, they talked and talked about it. But as a science fiction reader, it wasn't stuff that I hadn't seen before. But I thought the movie was well done anyway. I thought it looked great, and I thought there was a lot of cool scenes in it. So I say about 3.5 stars out of 5.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, good enough.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was enjoyable. That's one that I've seen recently. How about you?
I have been, I was accused of not really liking documentaries. I say accused. I took it as an accusation.
Was this from my
family member?
I've
been watching a lot of documentaries to prove that that's not the case at all.
I said, was that from a family member?
Oh, that was my husband.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, we had watched Searching for Sugar Man,
oh,
which is it was highly, I think maybe it won an Oscar. I can't remember, but it was highly awarded all over the place. And it's a really interesting documentary about a musician from the late 60s and early 70s who every time he made an album, the producers are like, oh my gosh, he's better than Dylan. Everybody's going to love him. And it would just sink like a stone. But it caught on in South Africa. In South Africa, because they were so cut off because of apartheid, they thought that he was bigger than Elvis everywhere in the world.
Oh, wow.
Until people would come to that country and go, oh my gosh, you've got this guy's stuff? Can I buy one here? Because you can't find it. So this is about some people who said, oh, all the legends are he died on stage somehow. In some dramatic fashion. Let's find out how he did die. And so they start looking for him.
Mm.
And so it was after watching that Rose was saying, well, you guys don't watch a lot of documentaries. And Tom said, oh, your mother doesn't like them. And I wind up going to and I'm like, well, I do. They're kind of like, you know, this movie we just watched. It kind of seems to be serious. And so then I was like, I have a lot of them on my list. So we also watched Exporting Raymond, which is hilarious because it's the story of the creator of Everybody Loves Raymond, who's asked to help adapt it so the Russians can make it for their market. And his cultural clashes, the artistic clashes, the idea of is this comedy universal or not, all make for great humor.
Oh, that's neat.
And kind of some interesting insights. Yeah, it's fun. It's a light, fun
that
watch.
That one has been on my list, but that's great. I need to watch it.
And then I watched one that was so new, evidently, in rental, I didn't realize this, that it wasn't on IMDb at the time I watched it, and it wasn't on Letterboxd. I had to figure out how to import it for Letterboxd, which is why it doesn't have a poster there, because I couldn't figure that out. But it's called Errol Garner, No One Can Hear You Read, and it's about this guy who was probably the most amazing improvisational jazz player ever, but he always just played popular jazz. And his signature was really both the improvisation and the joy that he conveyed through it. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's only 53 minutes long. It really focuses on his music more than anything else.
Oh, cool.
But by the time you get done, you understand why some of the musicians who've been talking the whole time say, and then he died, and I didn't know how I was going to ever have fun again, or how I was going to ever learn anything again.
Oh, wow.
Because they had to be on their toes every time.
Yeah.
they never knew how he, they were even going to identify the songs he was going to play, because he'd start off with a completely unique improvisation to go into it each time.
Wow.
They'd have to listen. Cool. And then you'd see them glancing at each other going, okay, we know what it is. Okay, then waiting for him to let them in.
Well, so, great. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I will check that out, too, for sure.
So, sorry. That's three fast ones.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, all right. Well, this has been fun.
It has been.
Tough movie. Very, very good movie.
But
there's so much to get out of it.
Yeah.
So, great.
Yeah. Definitely. Thank you for making the consensus final or whatever.
You're welcome. That's great.
So we'll do this again in, 4 months? We'll have another movie like this that's more pointedly inspirational.
That's great. Sounds good. Sounds good. Good idea.
Thank
All right. So we'll see everyone in a couple of weeks for, I don't know, we're going to talk about something light. Jesus of Nazareth.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. More inspiration, everyone. Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks.
Take care.
Talk to you again soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.